All right. Do you just like, you just want to like roll to see who goes first? I've got a dice. Yeah. Do you have a dice?
Yeah, I've got a dice right here. Yeah.
Okay, roll. Don't. Hey, listen to me.
Uh-huh.
If you fucking lie, I'll know.
I literally would never compromise the integrity of this podcast for a dice roll.
All right, roll.
All right. I got a 10. Super average.
I'm not. I shit you not right now. I'll text you a picture. I rolled a fucking 10.
Oh, we have to do roll? I thought you were going to say I rolled a nat 20. I'm like, you lie.
No, I shit you not. I rolled a fucking 10 too.
Okay. All right, we got to right. Roll off. Like go roll again. Off. Oh, the suspense. Oh. I got a nat 1.
I got a 9, so I guess I can go first.
Yeah, that was decided.
Yeah, all right. Natural so the first question that I have comes from Reddit. The person's name is Pony Lover with a U 2101. Is it possible for a dungeon master to also be a player in their own campaign? My friend and I are creating a D&D campaign. There are only 3 of us, and I am trying to think of how to make this work. I'm going to be the DM, but I would also love to have a playable character too. Thanks. I know kind of what your opinion is on this, but I love getting the nitty gritty of this. Hold on, I'm going to crack open a root beer.
That's fair. Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about this. So this is a thing. Having the DM also control their own player characters in the party is a thing that is done. It's referred to as like a DM NPC, DMPC, Dungeon Master Player Character. And people do this, and I think there are valid reasons for it. I think if you have a really small group, I think that can help. I think if you have a small group and they're particularly missing something, like let's say you're playing for 2 players, and one of them's like, oh, a barbarian sounds so cool, I'm going to roll up a barbarian. And the other one goes, oh, a rogue. Then we'll have like strength and stealth. So I'm going to play a rogue and I'll be all sneaky. And you're like, awesome. You have no magic. You have no heals. You have no utility spells. So they're like lacking pretty majorly in some areas, right? And so like, I think that is a valid reason to add a cleric or a bard or something that you control. You have to be very careful with DMPCs though, because one, in combat, you are now taking an extra turn where you're controlling. So you have not only do you have to control all your enemies and your bosses and lair actions and legendary actions and things like that, you also have your own PC's turn as well. So it takes away time, even more time from the other players. Also, if your PC ever does anything like really cool or really impactful, I feel like it always lessens the experience because it's like you're controlling it, and then your player character also did the kind of impactful thing, you know, got the last hit on a BBG, something like that. Like, you have to be really careful of those things. You also have to be careful because as the DM, you know all the secrets and the lore and the plot twists. And so you now have to control this PC that doesn't know those things. And how much does your PC interact in social settings? You know, if you're just playing this like healbot cleric that never talks and is only there in combat, like that's kind of more understandable. But there's other ways to solve problems like that. If you feel like your party doesn't have healing, give them more health potions. If you feel like they don't have spells that they need, give them a scroll for a spell that they might need in the future. You know, like there's ways to get around that. And especially if you have a larger group, you know, if you have a group of 4, 5, 6 people, DMPC, totally unnecessary in my mind. Yeah. Your players are going to cover everything. They're going to have abilities. And yeah, I just personally, for me, I don't like them. It really cheapens the experience for me. I think there's already enough going on with player characters and people I want to interact with. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it adds much for me. I do see the reasons why it could be useful, like I said, with a small group, but other than that, it's too much.
So from experience, I have had a game with a successful DM PC. I was running it for two players, so there was a pretty big gap in their abilities, but I was running Monster of the Week, a system that generally probably doesn't need a bigger party, but definitely some things were missing from that. I mean, this is the one I wrote. I wrote like a massive journal for it, drew a bunch of pictures for it, had written a bunch of lore.
Very like Gravity Falls style, yeah. Handbook kind of thing. Yeah, very cool.
I kind of knew going into it that that I was thinking about doing a DMPC. And the only reason that I really kind of thought that it needed it going into it was because one player was brand new, and then the other player was like very minorly experienced playing D&D like twice, but were like very enthusiastic about it. So they're both very enthusiastic. So I knew that they would be driving at all the decisions. But the part that worried me was like they essentially played I don't remember Monster of the Week playbooks. This is embarrassing. One of them played the Spellcaster one.
Yeah, Spellslinger, I think it's called.
Yes. And then the other guy played, oh my gosh, I can't remember. It was like a more niche class.
Yeah. It was like the Chosen, the Weird, the Professional, the Agent, the, I don't know.
It was the Professional, stuff. I think. Yeah, okay. It was the Professional. So he got like cool weapons and stuff, but he just like ended up not being that good at fighting. And then the Spellslinger is really good at fighting. Mm-hmm. But then neither of them really have like one skill that like you kind of have to have. I think it was cool.
Sure. Oh, sure.
So yeah. I kind of just had to fill that little bubble out. And
yeah, and I think that makes sense.
I made it work by, like, they knew going into it that I wasn't going to be feeding them information with my DMPC, and right. I made that abundantly clear. Like, this guy knows as much as you do, so don't expect me to just be handing you things with him. And then they like eventually it worked out really well because they ended up really liking the character. Oh, excuse me. And like that character had a small arc that kind of they pushed for, which was cool.
Yeah, I think it sounds like the kind of stars aligned for that, and that was like a situation where it was really good. I do think that a DMPC works best as like a guide, which I think kind of sounds like maybe that was a little bit there. Yes. I love a DMPC as like a, hey, you're going into like a extremely treacherous area and like I'm a, you know, kind of ranger guide. I have some heals, things like that. It's like, I'm going to help you get through this. And then as soon as you feel like they have done their job as a guide, they've got through the most treacherous area, a zone that you were worried about or a boss fight that you were worried about, then the guide can, you know, they've fulfilled their role. They can be done. If the players end up really liking them and it does work well for your group, maybe they stick around. Maybe the party wants them to stick around. Mm-hmm. And they have this character that they like now and they have some rapport with. And if not, then they can peace out. I love, to torture my players. And so if they do end up liking this guide, then I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill the guide in front of them. And they're going to be so sad to lose him. And it'll feel like a loss because not only have they lost this NPC or PC that they liked, but they also lost this like mentor kind of guy that they had. Maybe they lose some heals. And then you got to give them some healing potions or whatever. But, you know, you can do some satisfying story things with a DMPC that works.
And I think, have you watched, have you listened to NADPOD at all?
Some of it, yeah, not very
they,
far.
So they're three players, and the DM will frequently have like an NPC that will follow them along for an adventure.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, the DM basically has Brian Murphy is his name. He has his own DMPC that he plays with adventure, and he has like a stat block for them. He's playing like a PC stat block with it. Like the one that sticks out to me is in their first campaign. The old Cobb is a DMPC that Brian plays, and I think it worked like in their game. Like obviously they're incredibly skilled players and very veteran DM. It works very well, but I would agree that in most table situations, it's not going to work. And if you have three or more players, there's no reason to ever need one.
Yeah, I agree. Three is kind of the line where I'm like, I could see it for three, but like four players, they should be rounded enough. Like they should have a lot of things covered. I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't happen. You could have like a fighter, a barbarian, a rogue, and a monk or something. It's like, oh, we really don't have a lot of spells or heals. Like it could happen, but more than likely it won't. And if you do feel like they're missing something, like I said, you can provide items, you know, like healing potions or even like magic items. Like there's magic items that give some kind of healing, you know, abilities or some different utility. Like there's a lot of ways to solve
that. And the
that.
Bigger the party gets, the definite worse it is, because each player, it's like stacking on the amount of time that each player gets to themselves, basically.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I mean, if there's three players, 33% of the adventure is kind of like, should be like your arc or something. It's kind of
like
the 33% focus on you.
Yeah.
But as soon as 25%, it just, the scale starts going down. And then if you add a DMPC with four players, you're just adding another thing that takes time in combat that people, even though the like they know it's a DMPC, like your players are going to interact with them,
right? Like, and that's for the best. Like, if you are going to do a DMPC, they should be a real, you know, fleshed out character that talks, you know, socializes with the party. They have a connection with them. Like, that's best case scenario, because it'll just feel extra awkward if they're just, like I said, like a heal bot, like, you know, like non person. But like you said, then, you know, anytime you do take to flesh them out is time away from the players and the main story. And
I found a comment. It kind of reminded me of when we played the Strahd Dungeon World. I'll just read it to you. If you want to have a larger adventuring party so you don't have to scale your campaign for two players, you're probably better giving each player a loyal NPC sidekick. That's always worked best for me. Squire to a knight, apprentice to a wizard, loyal monk bodyguard who has sworn obedience. They don't have to be a lower level than the PCs, just be subservient to them. This way you'll have a larger party for combat, but the PCs still drive the story. He says, with two players and two DMPCs, for best effect, the DMPCs aren't totally mindless. Have them always argue the opposite side of any issue. And be weighing
that
both
would
sides.
Annoy
so
me.
That way, that one,
that would,
I was
that
like,
would frustrate the hell out of me. If every if time Luke, I said a plan, like the DMPC spoke up and was like, actually, that's a bad idea. I would.
No. I think he means the DMPCs argue with each other. The DMPCs are never agreeing with each other.
Okay, but if you're running two DMPCs and then you're talking,
that's a little weird.
And then they're talking to each other and you're playing them both as the DM. I'm like, I'd be, as a player, like I said, I'd be, I think that would frustrate me, because it's like you're already the DM and now you're playing two characters who are talking to each other. You're talking to yourself. Like,
that comment,
you just write a book, man.
That comment was from Aaron Schwab, by the way.
Schwab. I do like the sidekick idea, especially like a player controlled, like,
I mean, that's kind of what you did in that Strahd campaign Dungeon World. Like, I had an apprentice and someone else had a best friend, and someone else had a brother, and
So in that one, I knew the party was going to be like this rebellion that was rebelling against this tyrannical leader, which was Count Strahd. And I didn't want it to be just the players. I wanted it to be a full group of people that were kind of, you know, going through the lands and like taking out, you know, important kind of pieces of power for him and things like that. And because I don't like DMPCs, the way that I did that was every time I would add in different group members, and they picked up a couple people along the way, and some people started with them and things like that. But whoever had the kind of most in-depth relationship with one of the, I mean, they really were just NPCs, but with one of the NPCs, they would just get a bonus. So they didn't really have turns in combat. They would talk and socialize in like roleplay, and in combat, they would just give like a bonus to whoever was their kind of most favored party member. And it was just like a +1 or a +2. So then, you know, they were helping you guys and they made you better in combat, but like it didn't really take any extra time. It was just a flat bonus, which I think worked out well. But even then, it honestly was a little much. You know, it was a little bit much to keep track of. Not everybody connected with any of them as well as other people. Like some people had like, you know, very close relationships with them, or even kind of like brewing romances, things like that. And that was really fun. But then other people like didn't really care. They just wanted to go kill the monsters and stuff. So
yeah,
I would just be really careful with it, and always, and this is just a good tip in general, like always be ready to pivot. You know, if you add something cause you think it's going to be fun or work well and your players don't seem to be engaging with it the way you thought, or you feel like it's not going as smooth as you thought, you can always try something else, you know, move it around. Like, it doesn't have to be obvious. Like I said, in the case of like a DMPC, kill him. Have the BBG kill him in front of the party and make it a big deal. But like, you know, yeah. But just for anything, like always be willing to like quickly move a different direction, because at the end of the day, you just want your players to be having the most fun possible.
Yeah. And I think that for like, obviously for most situations, it's not going to work out. Most parties are more than two players.
Yeah. I would just be very hesitant to do it. If you feel like you really need it.
I feel like an inexperienced DM might start accidentally giving their PC more of the spotlight than some of their players. And at that point, that's just like, that's not fair to your players. So if you are like thinking of running a DMPC and have started and noticed that you're giving your PC a bunch of time when they, you might think they deserve it, but they don't.
Nobody wants to be like playing and then suddenly like the DMPC comes in and kills all the monsters and saves the day and saves the princess. It's like, oh, like, your character, like, you get to run the game and control everything, and your character like does all the cool stuff. Like, yeah, like, that's just a recipe for disaster.
Write a book. Fun.
Yeah, write a book. Exactly. If you have a world and characters, you know, in your head that you want, you know, to all play out a certain way and do this stuff, you should be writing a book, not playing D&D.
D&D's collaborative. I have heard one person D&D before. I've heard someone talk about it is possible, like, playing D&D alone, basically, with
that's
yourself,
and it actually being imaginary friends. That's called the voices in my head.
I don't know where I heard that, but I have heard someone
talking
about
that before. I'm sure it's
possible.
There was one system that, like, in the rule book, it was talking about, like, one person, or one DM, one player, so two people D&D, and that seemed interesting. There's definitely ways to do stuff like that.
One person, one player would be really interesting, actually.
Yeah. We should do it for an episode of the podcast.
That would be fucking hilarious.
That'd be fun. All right, Jake, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Do Forever DMs actually want out? This comes from Reddit user AncientDig5521. My last post was asking about characters that you love but can never play. As a Forever DM, I feel that. I have made so many characters in D&D Beyond that never saw the light of day. And I got a lot of comments from people saying the reason they can't play a character they love is because they're the Forever DM. It made me wonder if they actually want out. I've seen a lot of jokes online about how Forever DMs can never be players again, or that they are desperate to have someone else DM, and I'm curious if there's some truth to it or if it's just all jokes. I can see how, if they want to be a player, it's harder for a DM to be in multiple games because of the amount of prep work and behind-the-scenes responsibilities they have to do. Plus, a DM can't really walk out of a campaign the same way a player can, and there will always be more players than DMs, so if you're able to somewhat enjoy DMing, it can feel like you're stuck with it. So, Forever DMs, if you're reading this, blink twice if you need help.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
And I think he goes into a little bit of why. But for sure, like, I looking at you, like, I can see when you're making characters and stuff that, like, you're really invested in them, but you also mm-hmm. are constantly making characters and you're kind of in that mindset all the time. So when you're playing a character, sometimes you have that tendency of being like, oh, this character was really cool and I had a lot of fun. I'm ready for the next one.
Right. And I think that just comes from because I've DM'd so much compared to playing, like, I just haven't gotten mm-hmm. to play a lot of characters where, like, you know, you guys that I've run for, like, you have played, a lot of you have played, like, every class or, you know, have played or just have played so many characters, like, you know, you've done a lot of this stuff, whereas, like, I just haven't. So it's like I start playing a rogue and I'm like, oh, rogue's really fun, but I also really wanted to try Bard. And, you know, the second I go back to DMing, it's going to be another couple of years before I play again. So, you know, it's like I think that comes from that a little bit. They're definitely, like, I think this person nailed it on the head. It's like there's definitely kind of two sides of a forever DM. There's, like, the forever DM that, you know, they can't go back to being a player. Like, they just, you know, they're so in, like, the DM mindset and kind of mm-hmm. have a hard time relinquishing that control. And then there's the ones that, you know, they do want someone else to DM. They're desperate for someone else to DM, but they just, it just has never happened. They're not interested mm-hmm. or, you know.
I think that dichotomy is pretty well observed in you and your dad. Because your Joe is by far a forever DM and does not want to play and just wants to be a DM. And you, I mean, you want to DM, which is awesome, but every once in a while you're like, God, for the love of everything that is holy, somebody please fucking DM.
Yeah, somebody run something. I want to play something. I definitely, that's when I start to get, you know, I can DM really consistently for like 8 months and then I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm getting a little burned out, you know, it's been two campaigns or, you know, maybe one really big campaign. I'm like, I need to play. And I'm actually, especially in like the last year or so, I'm wanting to play less and less. Like when we used to play like in high school and stuff, I used to make characters all the time. Like I just so badly had so many cool character ideas, so many classes and subclasses I wanted to play that I thought were so interesting. Now I'll have like one good one in the back of my mind and they'll just sit there for like months until I get to use them. And I think part of it is because like obviously you're biased to the things that like, you know, the themes that you enjoy. So like when you create a campaign, you know, just because of the way that you process things and the way the things you think are cool, you're going to think that the campaign that you made is so cool. You know, you're like, I put all the best stuff in here, you know? And so of course you're going to be like, oh, I wish I could play in this campaign, you know, but you run it for your friends, whatever. But then when I do relinquish that control to somebody else, you know, like, you know, the campaign is just very different, or maybe it's, you know, not something that I would have run, or maybe there's like a lot of decisions that are made that like I wouldn't have made as a DM. So then it's hard because you're not just enjoying it as a player. You're playing it as a player and also thinking of like, oh, if I was DMing, I would have done this differently, or it would have been way cooler to do this, or I would have added this, things like that. And so you're not really getting the full enjoyment out of it. And I wouldn't say that this has happened to me as much, but there's definitely some people out there that have experienced this where it's like you maybe relinquish the title of DM to somebody and then the campaign they run is not very good. Or they're just, you know, maybe it's because they're a new DM. It's just not very good. And then you're going to feel really bad about it. And I have had not that exact situation happen, but like similar situations where, you know, especially if you have some bad sessions or a bad, you know, some people aren't having fun. The group can kind of start to fall apart a little bit. You feel like you're picking up pieces. You're like, no, I'll run something really fun. We'll have a blast.
So fast.
It can because, you know, somebody doesn't have fun and then they're a little bit more likely to cancel next week. Yeah. And then somebody has a family event. Like it all piles up.
I have been the DM that has messed up a session and then we've stopped playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it feels terrible. I will say it feels really bad. Mm-hmm. But
I had a campaign that went one session and And we never that played that true. One again.
That one did go
I don't think that it was because I ran still... it so terribly. It was just, there was no, a lot of it stuff. Was,
yeah.
There was a lot. It wasn't a great session. I'll say that for sure. It wasn't the best I've ever done, but there was also a lot of
I mean, it was things, cool. So. Yeah, it was that was the one with, like, Fenrir, right? It was like a Nordic theme. There's the wolf that, like, stalked us in the forest. We had that one guy that was under the table.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm talking about, it was a Dragonlance. It was a Dragonlance campaign.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You played the evil wizard, like, Emperor Palpatine guy.
Oh!
yeah.
I liked that character, but yeah, that was, I was talking about, like, we were in, maybe, like, freshman or sophomore year of high school.
Yeah.
And we started to try to make a new, this is before, like, what ended up being our go-to group.
Uh-huh.
And, like, the one guy went under the table for half the session.
Yeah, we did have a guy that got bored, and so he laid under the table on his phone while we all played, and that was pretty miserable. He didn't play after that. He got invited back maybe once or twice in, like, a span of, like, 10 years. That was pretty miserable. That, yeah, and that's, I mean, that was just, that was on him. But, yeah, it happens, you know, you have a bad session or a campaign doesn't go the way you think, and things kind of fall apart, you know, like, people, if they're not having fun, they might cancel because they'd rather do something else, and then somebody else has an obligation, and then it's been 3 weeks, and you don't really remember where you're at, and somebody's like, I could, you know, there's something else you could play, somebody else could run something else, and it happens.
That, dude, I hate the gaps in between sessions. Like, I'm playing once a week, perfect. Playing once a week is perfect. I generally remember the last session and what happened. However, once you get past that 1 week, you start getting into Jake's dumb foggy memory.
Yeah.
Because I'm a stinky idiot, and then I can't remember what the fuck happened to my own goddamn character.
It's like 2 weeks ago, 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, you're like, man, I don't know, there was goblins. It's really tough, you know, to remember all those little conversations.
And then the DM might be like, oh, yeah, you guys did this and this. And you're like, I did what to a goblin?
Yeah, literally. And yeah, so, you know, that's why you always hope that your DM's taking, you know, the best notes they can, or somebody in your group's taking the best notes they can and giving some accurate recaps. But
that's why,
or even as a DM,
that's,
like,
why I started doing the recaps, was because I was like, oh, if we ever have, like, a time where we're like, where we know that we're going to be gone for, like, a session or two, no one's going to remember. I just got to write everything that happened down. Plus, for me, it's like, I put everything for DMing on a OneNote. So I save all my OneNotes. I have everything that I've DM'd.
Yeah.
And I have little synopses for everything that I've DM'd. And sometimes I just go back and I'll just look through it. It's good memories.
Yeah, that would be fun to read through, especially because, like you said, you won't remember so much of it. So, like, it's going to sound so crazy reading through, like, the whole thing. I love the synopses. Those are super helpful. But and even as a DM, it can be hard. Like, if you haven't played 2 weeks and you're like, oh, what was that NPC's name?
Oh, I got to get ready for this session. Oh, it's a good thing that night after the session, I wrote everything down.
Yeah, that's super helpful. I would absolutely recommend that. So,
we didn't get incredibly off topic, though.
The question was, do forever DMs actually want out?
I don't think so.
I think if they want out, they'll let you know. They'll ask somebody else to play.
Like, for you, I know that we had, like, there was a big gap where you were just like, guys, I can't DM anymore. Yeah. And if we want to keep playing, like, someone has to step up.
Yeah,
and
that was when, like, no one had run anything before. It was like only like, were very few times. Yeah,
and we were basically with the guys we play now, and the only other person that had really played anything was me. So everyone was like, "Oh." So I stepped up to do something. And yeah, it was probably the only thing that saved us for playing D&D for the next, or any RPG for the next, like, 8 or 9 months.
Yeah, I was just so burnt out. And so we could dedicate a whole episode to talking about like burnout and stuff, and we will. We should. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really tough, and it is really hard to relinquish the control as a DM because the DM's role often spreads into so many other things. Like, I don't think it should be this way, but I feel like the DM is also ends up being responsible for like texting the group chat or texting everyone and like making sure they're going to be there and what time and where at, which is hard because the DM already has so many other responsibilities, just getting the game ready. I don't feel like that should be their role all the time, but you know, the DM does come sometimes kind of feel like the impromptu leader of the group, which of course in game, that's a little bit more accurate, but outside of game, I don't think that should really be true. And it's hard to relinquish that control, especially because, so like, for instance, like kind of what we're doing now, I had run a couple things and I kind of wanted a break. And we had a friend who said, I'll DM a fifth edition adventure. And we said, okay.
We have played fifth edition in like 3 years at this point.
So yeah, this is the first time we've played fifth edition in a long time. Well, actually, we're playing D&D 1.
Yeah, we're playing D&D 1, but fifth edition, I mean, it's basically the same thing.
Yeah, some changes.
Yeah. Updates.
But what happened, so he said, I'll run this thing. And I said, great. And so and then there was like a long break between while he kind of got it ready. And then people were gone for a long time. And like, we couldn't get a week where everyone was available. There was always like one person gone. And we didn't want to start session one with somebody being gone. So it took us like there was probably like a 3 month break before we even started playing.
I think it was, about 2 months, 2 or 3.
Yeah. So there was like a 2 or 3 month break before we even started playing. And now we've been playing for a while, 4 or 5 months on top of that.
November. It was after Thanksgiving. Because we're like, all right, let's just wait for their Thanksgiving to get by.
So it's been 6 months or whatever. So, which is fine. And I've really enjoyed this campaign. We're actually wrapping it up tomorrow. But my point is, I wanted a little break and I ended up with a 6 month break, which
it's almost been an 8 month break because of the space between.
Yeah, true. Yeah, almost been an 8 month break for the space between, which is fine, and I've enjoyed this adventure, like I said, this campaign, and I've enjoyed playing, and I like my character, but I didn't intend to take an 8 month break, for sure. So that was a lot more than I bargained for, and for some groups, you know, not everybody plays, you know, as often as we do, or, you know, things like that, and so, like, an 8 month break or 6 month break, like, that could, you know, your group might be done playing by then, you know, like, so... it's hard. It's a hard thing to do, to relinquish that control and that scheduling and all that planning to somebody else. You have to have a lot of trust in it, for sure.
You know, I will say, for all the games that I have played, I feel like every time that I've DM'd and then gone back to a player, I think it makes me a better player. And I think that's true vice versa. Every time you DM for a while and then you play, it makes you a better DM. And I think it just, like, sometimes for that forever DM, that puts you in the mindset of your player for a little while to see how they feel when they, like, they fuck up a role or something bad happens or someone shits on you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. Metaphorically shit on. Not metaphorically, not literally shit on. Although, possibly literally shit on. Sometimes you're rolling out one and falling shit and... everyone laughs at you, but that little, like, that however long it is of you relinquishing being a DM makes you see the point of view of the player a little bit easier, because sometimes it can feel like DM versus player.
Yeah, and if you're having a bad day, like, it can feel bad. Yeah, you know, you're, you know, the DM hits DM you with an ability player. And you're like, me, like,
so I think that gives you a little bit more empathy towards not only players being able to give more empathy towards the DM, and I think all players should DM at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I think it definitely is enlightening to see how much work actually has to go into making a good campaign.
Yeah,
and then when you are in a good campaign as a player, it makes you appreciate it that much more.
Yeah. And like not only the like work, like backloading work, but like the work during the session. Like you have so much stuff in the air and you have to like, you know, lead them in the right direction, kind of helping them. You know, obviously like the players are guiding the story, but like it's not exactly, I mean, there could be, it could be a full sandbox campaign, but a lot of times you have to kind of help them figure out where to go. You know, you can't just drop them in their master world and say, go, you know, maybe sometimes you can, some players might enjoy that, but at least for our group, like, you know, I kind of let you guys know, like, you know, where the interesting stuff is, you know, what's going on in the world, where some interesting, you know, objectives are and stuff. And you guys can kind of pick, you know, how you do those things. But
I don't even think we've done a full literal sandbox campaign. It always ends up being like, we do like an adventure or something, and then we're like, okay, let's try to like, maybe like I think one time we were like mercenaries and we would go to a job board and we're like, okay, we're going to get this job. And then one of the jobs just ends up like stretching out really far, and that just becomes the campaign.
Right. Yeah. Or like some player's backstory comes into the kind of, you know, view of it, the focus, and you do that
more linear.
Yeah, because you end up focused on a thing. I don't know. I don't know if we've ever done like a, I don't think very many people do a true like Grand Theft Auto style sandbox. Like I think as soon as your players latch on to a storyline that's interesting, and you know, you kind of are going to follow that and flesh that out. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Maybe.
I can't even. Like I've kind of thought that my stuff was sandboxy, but now that I kind of think about it,
I think it starts as a sandbox, and then you like wait to see what the players are interested in, what they want to follow, and then you like really flesh out like those couple like adventures that they have started, and then then they kind of come together for one final, you know, climactic thing, and then that's like the end. Because like I don't know, at least for me, like I don't have the time to prep every adventure in every city, every NPC, every shop, like, you know, because we've had campaigns where like I make a city and then you never go there, you know, which like it just doesn't ever become super necessary, you know, like, and I'm sure everybody's had that. So it's like, you know, and you could do things to, you know, kind of negate that. You could, you know, put essential things in each city or whatever, like, you know, you can have your players explore more by tying it into the story. But yeah, it's you don't want to do too much work as a DM that never gets seen. You want to try to minimize that just for your own sanity, you know?
Yeah. And I think the like key takeaway of like, if do forever DMs want to play, I think sometimes they do. I think sometimes they don't.
You
should
ask. Everybody ask your DM, hey, do you want a break? I would love to try running something. Even if you've never done it before, you should try it.
Even if you only run something for three sessions?
Or one.
Make it a one shot. Or one, yeah, one shot. Make it a really good three sessions. Put your back's work into it. Now, I've in my few times DMing, whenever I DM, I kind of go all out. So it's a lot of work for me because I really like having cool things, physical things that you guys can
use. You love the physical handouts.
Yeah, I spend quite a lot of time making like physical handouts for you guys, and I think it makes the story more interesting. It definitely like captures your attention. Like when I pull a note out of my bag and hand it to you and you read it quietly to yourself, I know what that note says. It makes me happy, but no one else can hear you quietly reading it to yourself unless you choose to read it to the party. Right. And like that, I feel like that's way cooler than just saying, oh, and the note reads this. And like, I mean, I have access to a printer and I know how to type, so it's really not that hard to make little things like that, but I have made like big things too.
Mm-hmm.
One player was a Circle of the Stars druid, I believe.
Yeah,
and I made like a constellation map that would lead them to whatever their arc was, but
That was the campaign that we didn't finish.
And I fully think that it was because, like, all of us had kind of different expectations of what was going to happen, and then
a couple of expectations
didn't get met, and then I ruled poorly on one thing, and then
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. And that's the thing, is like, it's not like one mistake that ends the campaign. It's like, there's like, it can be so many things. It's like scheduling things plus, you know, people's, I get upset about stuff. And yeah, it's like, it's a huge snowball by the end of like things that have come to the end. But yeah, you know, you do great on those physical handouts. But like you said, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So if you've never run something before, you should try it. I think it'll give you, like you said, I think it'll give you a lot of respect for your DMs. If you are a DM and you're feeling burnt out, feel free to ask your players, you know, if they could try it. And if they don't love it, or if it doesn't go the way people expect, you know, if your group is like, eh, then you can come back to it. But you should try to give yourself a break if you can, or if you're interested, you know, or if you're like, no, this is my role, I am the DM, more power to you, man.
I mean, even then, if you've never played before,
I don't think there's a DM there that's never out there that's never played. I mean, I guess there probably is, but that seems crazy.
There might be a literal forever DM where they've never done that.
If you are a true blooded forever DM, you've never played. I think at that point you just gotta stick it out. I think you gotta hold
that record.
Yeah, you gotta hold
31
that,
years, man. Never played.
Yeah, don't you dare even roll up a character.
Went to my goddamn deathbed, started when I was 11, died, never played one game.
Yeah. All right, I have a final question here I think could wrap us up. This is honestly, I'm very curious about your answer, because this is honestly a question I have asked a Reddit post I've like looked for myself as a DM. And this is, how do you reward engaged players without putting them on a pedestal? This comes from XValakX. Hi, I'm currently running a D&D campaign with 5 relatively new players. One player in particular has shown exceptional interest in her character background, going as far as wanting to do some one-on-one sessions where we just play out some backstory stuff to really flesh out the character. Just giving me a lot of meat to work with as a DM. The other players are all engaged while playing. Some have done light character building, but nothing to this level. How do I support this really engaged player while making sure not to put them on a pedestal just because the other players don't have this exceptional level of ambition? Any advice would be great. And I'll extend this, broaden this out a little bit. Sometimes you just have a player that's just so into it. They're just emotionally invested. You know, they're sad when the sad stuff happens. They're screaming and they're excited when the nat 20s hit, like things like that. They're just, they're so into it, and they're so into the role play, and they, you know, and yeah, they're just incredibly engaged. And it's like, how do you reward that person without like picking favorites? You know, it's,
yeah, that's hard. This person says they've had one-on-one sessions with the player. That's
a new level.
Crazy in my mind. Yeah. You know, Keegan, I love you. You're my friend. I don't want to just sit here and play D&D with you for 5 hours.
It's not a 5. It doesn't have to be 5 hours.
We play D&D for 5 hours at a time.
Yeah,
but the
one-on-one session doesn't have to be 5 hours. But I can see this. I could see being fun to like, hey Jake, like you're running this campaign. I have this character. Could we, like, maybe not like play D&D, but like sit here and at least talk about backstory stuff and flesh it out.
That's
more.
That's fine. We've done that before.
I think you're confused, like, on the verbiage. They just said do one-on-one sessions. It says, oh, it says play out some backstory stuff.
Yeah.
But I think, but this, right, what we're doing right now is a one-on-one session. We're having like a one-on-one session. It's like, talking or sitting down to meet is it like a session. I don't know if it's a full D&D playing.
Playing D&D with just you and one other, I know we like talked about it at the beginning. It might be fun.
It'd be fun
An episode of this. I'll say that. But like, just for a game, I don't think I'd ever want to do it without at least one other person there. Especially for me, I don't go into sessions of... I don't go into campaigns with a backstory, usually ever anymore. I know. I found it so tedious. Like, oh, this is my character, and this is his tragic backstory that makes me so depressed every time I play him. So I found it a lot easier to just go into the session being like, yeah, this is his name, this is the class he's playing, and this is maybe what he looks like, and maybe a general theme for a character.
Well, and you have found success in that because you are good at finding interesting arcs that present themselves in the campaign and latching onto it. You know, you will find a god that you can start worshiping and get in a complicated relationship with, and it becomes a big thing in the campaign. Like, you're able to find those things because you're experienced.
I want to get at that.
Okay.
I want to fight you there. if you go into D&D with a 5-page backstory, you cannot get those situations. You've already given your character what they're going to be and what they're going to do.
That's not true. There's always time to change, man. I think it depends on the focus of what you write in your backstory, but you are very good at finding those like story hooks and those, you know, not a character backstory, but definitely a character arc and story that you tell. But some people might not be as adept at finding those things or not sure what they can interact with or to what level. And so having a backstory can definitely be a really great starting point for, you know, how this character might feel or act or what they might do, you know, because, you know, not everybody's going to figure that out on the fly, you know, improv that. Some people might need a starting point of like, okay, well, you come from a background of crime. And so, you know, you might be interested in the criminal underworld and know some stuff about it. You know, like that's just a good role play starting off point, you know, things like that.
Like a backstory like that, like what you just described, I come from the criminal underworld.
Mm-hmm.
This is like maybe a thing or two that has happened to me that's pivotal. Like that, I think, is all the backstory you should have. I feel like a lot of players are making like super huge complex backstories, and when things don't get touched on, they get really disappointed, and then that ruins their perception of playing, and then they don't want to play anymore. And we've had a player that has done basically exactly what I've just said.
I know what you're referencing, but I think the problem there is if you do like writing a backstory and you like getting really into it for like what this character has lived and done before the adventure starts, I think you need to be really careful. You shouldn't expect the DM to include all that stuff in the main story or have it all come back up. It's great if that can happen and that works for everybody, but I don't think you can go in expecting that or expecting certain situations because of what you wrote in your backstory. I think your backstory should be should only be for you. It should be for you to reference for like, this is what my character is. This is how I know how to role play them and how I know how to play them because I took the time to flesh out where they come from. And so this is how this person is. I think that is where it should end. I think it is then the DM's decision if they see that backstory and like, that's super cool. And then they include things, they tie things into the main story. That has to come from them, and you can't expect that or go in planning that.
And I
definitely agree.
So rewarding a good player,
a super engaged
obviously,
player,
yeah. Obviously, this person that this Redditor was talking about is super, super involved and wants to and really wants to get into the game. That should show when they play, and I'm sure it does. But that's like all the reward that I really need is that I know that I really enjoy my character and that I'm playing my character the best of my ability. Why do I need more?
I don't think that it's that you need more. I just like,
I've had
a lot of players that are not as engaged, or are sometimes barely engaged at all. Sometimes they lay under the table on their phone or somewhere. or, you know, things like that happen. And so I appreciate so much when a player is so engaged and they are loving the story and they're, you know, really acting out their character in role play and doing really cool stuff in combat and getting super creative. Like, I appreciate it so much as a DM that I want to show them how much I appreciate. I can tell them, I could send them a text and say, hey, you have been so much fun to play with. And that is a great start. But sometimes
I think that is like, you haven't even ever sent me a text to be like, you are fantastic. I see the way you look at me with those big hearts in your eyes.
Always, man, always. but I think shoot him a text,
be like, hey, like, you're killing it. You're awesome. Keep it up. Like that's more than enough for me.
That's fair. I don't know. I think it would just be nice to have something. You can obviously, like, there's like inspiration points in 5th edition or D&D 1. Like, those are built in. Those are great. You know, they can spend it to get advantage. If you want to create a little bit more of an in-depth system, like, you know, maybe you give out like physical little tokens. Like, anytime somebody does something really creative or, you know, really is engaged with the story, you give them a little token and they can spend it for something in game advantage or something else. Talk to your players about it, like, make sure it feels fair and that it feels fun for them. Cause that could encourage other players to get as engaged. It could get to that level, you know? If they see one player getting all these tokens to spend and then they get advantage and then they play even better because, you know, they're rolling better or things like that, like, they might go, oh, I gotta get into this now. You know, I'm gonna, you know, make some really cool character decisions. Like, that could be really fun. You just want to make sure that, yeah, it's not all about one player and that, you know, it's not, you've not put the spotlight on one person. You want to share the spotlight and give everybody a chance.
As soon as you single out one player and be like, this person is playing exactly how I want them to, that makes, well, like, that could make everyone else, like, there's an option if you're giving some kind of incentive, could motivate your party to play in a similar way, which I don't think is always the best thing.
I don't think it's a similar way. It's just being more engaged. However you're engaged.
Or it could demoralize them, make them think, oh, I thought I was doing really well, and I don't get any of these cool tokens that the other person gets ever.
That's true.
So I don't know. Yeah. I think keep it to personal text. Like, don't... I don't want to say, like, don't show affection for your players in front of your other players, but, like, don't put them on a pedestal while you're playing with everyone else.
That's what the question's asking, man. It says, how do I reward an engaged player without putting them on a pedestal? That's the exact question.
Yeah. So, yeah, don't. Just don't put them on a pedestal. Let them play how they play.
What does that mean?
I think what that means is don't make everyone else feel bad for not being that player.
But that's not rewarding the player. That's not making anyone else feel bad. It says, how do I reward an engaged player without putting them on a pedestal? You're saying text them and say
You're doing a great job. A compliment. Goes a long ways for most people. You would be absolutely astonished how many people don't get complimented during their weeks. And if they go and play D&D with their friends and the DM texts them afterwards, they're like, hey, that was fucking rad as shit what you did there. Like, that could make someone's week right there.
I agree. I think that's great. But I think you can go further with it. I think that that's where we disagree.
What do you think you could do to go further? That isn't singling out that player as, like, to everyone else, and that could make everyone else feel bad.
Well, I think, like I said, inspiration points are a great start. Or like a similar system, like I said, with tokens that are equipped similar to an inspiration point. I think involving it, if you're, you know, want to involve player backstories, you know, looking into their backstory and finding things that you can kind of bring up into the main story will feel very rewarding to the player as, you know, who's really engaged. Obviously, try to include everybody's stuff if you're involving player backstories, but, like, you know, having, you know, their piece kind of, you know, have a big moment, you know, where it is in the spotlight, you know, and then obviously, you know, you want to get to other moments where other people get the spotlight too, but, you know, maybe early on, maybe their thing kind of becomes a big part, things like that. I don't want to make any player feel bad, but when you have a player that really is engaged to that next level, like, I definitely want them to know that I appreciate it for sure.
I do agree
that a text, like, just telling them how much you appreciate that is a really great starting point, but I do think you can go further with it without making other people feel bad.
Don't give
them, like, levels. Don't be like, you're level 10, everyone else is level 5, and you have a holy avenger. Like, don't do that for sure.
I'm coming from the player standpoint, who is the player that is very invested. Sure. And I think the best way that maybe you could do it is maybe get in contact with that player and be like, okay, some of people aren't clearly aren't as invested as you. Why don't we try to set up something with your backstory that I mean, you kind of hinted at this, something with your backstory and give you this really big moment that might inspire them to get a really big moment. Mm-hmm. Kind of like you're the example and then everyone else can follow through. I feel like that would, if I was another player, that wouldn't, if that person got through their story thing first and it was awesome, I wouldn't feel so bad.
You'd be like, my time is not now. They got through their story.
They got through their story. Now it's my turn.
I know mine's coming up. Yeah, I think that's cool. I think that'd be great.
But other than that, I don't see many other ways you can do it.
And if you are the player, like you know, you were saying, if you are the player that's really engaged, you should be amping up your other party members. You should be amping up the other players to get them involved. You should be sharing that spotlight. You know, try to
do that.
You know,
too.
if you role play a lot, involve them in your role play. Pull them right into it. Be like, I come up to this person while we're long resting.
Yeah,
and you know, I start talking.
There's a lot of times, especially recently, where. I mean, we've had like one player that's iffy sometimes, and like I've tried my damnedest to just like pull them into something and be like, "Hey, what do you think about this?" and try to get them more into it.
Yeah, if somebody doesn't want to though, they won't. Yeah. You know, they have to want that too. But hopefully, you have players that want to all be involved and having fun. And yeah, try to rope them in if you feel like you're at a different level. Try to rope them in on stuff. Like even in combat, man, like instead of, you know, rolling to hit the dragon with your axe again, try to do something else. Try to yell out an inspiring, you know, thing to your teammate that gives them advantage and maybe they land a super big blow or, you know, cast a spell on them that makes them really powerful. Like, you know, really, you know, involve everybody and try to amp everybody up. Mm-hmm.
Definitely don't play favoritism if you're the DM in that situation. That could be definitely the worst thing you could do is just be like, this is my favorite player, and everything revolves around them.
You already have one player who's engaged at a different level than the other players, and if the DM engages with
that player at a different level, then it makes everyone else.
Yeah,
lower.
You make them higher level, and you give them the Holy Avenger, and you bring all their backstory stuff into it, and like no one else is getting the spotlight. Then yeah, they're gonna feel horrible. They might even quit. And now you're also trying to figure out how to play D&D with one DM and one player. So it's full circle. So you're going to have to learn. Yeah, I agree.
All right. I think that's a good stopping point. This is a...
It all came full circle.
This is a long one.
I thought that last question was going to be like a real quick one, and it wasn't. It wasn't.
I yelled at you, and I apologize.
Hey, that's the show, man. I think it's way more interesting and way more fun when we have vastly different opinions on something. Mm-hmm. That sparks interesting conversation. I think it'd be really boring if every single question I was like, I think you should do this. And you're like, yeah, I agree. You should do that. All right, what next?
Yeah.
Like, that's boring.
I think my mic peaked at that spot, so I'm going to have to edit around that. So I guess it's fine that it's my fault. All right. Well, all right. If you guys enjoyed, be sure rate us 5 stars. If you're watching this on iTunes, the rating on iTunes is a big thing. That's how you get monetized and shown around to everyone. Comments, if you really enjoyed it, please leave us a comment. Everything is going to help us kind of spread the word of the show. And the bigger the word gets of the show, the more enthusiasm that we get into it. Not that we're non-enthusiastic right now. Obviously, I yelled at you.
You yelled at me. That is enthusiasm. That's exactly the kind of enthusiasm. We're invested, man. We're the engaged players.
We're still waiting for that first email question, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, if you're emailing a question and it has something to do with like a story, if you could like make it brief, a paragraph at the most, and that gives us plenty of time that we could read your story and talk about it.
I'm reading it. Send me the essay, man.
You can give Keegan the essay.
Your life story. I'm reading it.
And Keegan can make the synopsis for it.
No, I'm reading it in full.
No.
I'm gonna add details that they didn't even put in. I'm making it long.
We're going to act it out. I'll be the voices and you narrate.
It's fully acted.
It's 27 minutes of the person's story and then 15 minutes of us being like, oh, yeah, I think you were wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would really love to hear from some people about if you've experienced any of the things we've talked about, or you just have a funny story or a question that we can answer, you want some advice on, I would love to hear from you guys. Our email is in the description, northwoodpod@gmail.com, I believe.
Yeah, go ahead, watch our other show, below. The Northwood Project.
Mm-hmm.
Northwood Project. I love the Northwood Project.
It's good, man. It's good stuff in there. You should go check it out. If you like horror anthologies, it's spooky. It's good stuff.
All right. Well, anyways, I've been Jake, and this is my buddy Keegan. Bye.
Bye.